Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for joining me this hour. Experts have argued that to achieve mastery in any subject, you must start early and have lots and lots of discipline, singular focus, drill down, narrow but deep, or not. When journalist David Epstein analyzed the world's top athletes, musicians, scientists, and innovators, people who by hearing their very name alone conjure the word success, he found a different story, one that says early specialization is the exception, not the rule. Epstein argues that in many disciplines, people who have a wide breadth of experience, who find their path later in life, who may have quit something early to try something else, the generalists of the world can and will excel. And considering this show is called All of It, not this specific part of it, you know, we wanted to talk to him. David Epstein joins us now from D.C. to discuss his new book, Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. Hi, David.
Hi.
Listeners, we want to hear from you about your path to success. What roads did you take? Did you go down to becoming who you are? Do you regret specializing in something, or has it proven lucrative for you? Are you proud generalists like me? What does that look like in your adult life? Please give us a call. Our lines are open, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. So, David, how do you define generalist?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in fact, as you go through different domains, it sometimes has sort of a different connotation. But I think it's typically the people that I was writing about or the research I was writing about was following people who weren't setting out to be generalists necessarily, but they zigzagged from thing to thing. They sort of tend to have an approach, short-term planning, basically, where instead of saying, here's the thing I'm doing, you know, and following the kind of commencement speech address where you picture you're going to be in 10 or 20 years and follow that, they sort of say, here's where I am right now, here are my interests and my skills, here are the opportunities in front of me, I'm going to try this one, and then a year from now, maybe I'll change because I will have learned something about myself or my opportunities. And they sort of do that and zigzag until they optimize what economists call match quality, the degree of fit between your interests, abilities, and the work that you do. And so a lot of the people I write about, when they arrive where they are, they have this very broad experience. Sometimes they, for a period of time, they look as if they're behind peers. But when they do eventually focus to some degree or another, which we all do at one point or another, they have this much more varied background and breadth of experiences.
There's a phrase that I think makes generalists squirm and maybe even feel bad about themselves. The jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, but we always leave off the end of that phrase, which is oftentimes better than master of one. And I think it's sort of culturally telling that we chopped that part off.
I was going to ask, that was the question I was going to lead to was, at what point did being a generalist fall out of favor? Was it economically based? Was it just a cultural shift?
Yeah, that's interesting. And it depends. It changes over time. So if you look at, for example, one of the domains I look at is technological innovation. And if you look at research on patents, for a lot of the 20th century, particularly starting like mid-20th century up till maybe about mid-1980s, people who did most of their work in one of the U.S. Patent Office's technological classes, okay, so they just drilled down to that one class, were making the biggest contributions. But from about the late 80s to the present, that changed, and it became people who actually spread their work across a larger number of technological classes and often brought information from one domain to another domain where it was more rare. And the researcher who studied that trend thinks that part of the reason is that information is so rapidly disseminated now that there are many, many more opportunities to make unique combinations of knowledge that already exists and comparatively fewer to just push the cutting edge in a much more narrow way.
And since you've brought up technology, I did want to ask you about, you know, we've had Kara Swisher on the show, the mm-hmm. journalist who knows all things tech mm-hmm. in a very deep and intense way. And she has said during our interview, and she said this other places too, that she thinks a lot of guys in Silicon Valley needed to be liberal arts majors, should have taken some literature courses. So they have a sense of cultural comprehension, that they're so singularly focused. And that's some of the problems that we see, especially in social media. So my question to you is how has being a generalist or promoting being a generalist as a positive thing, what impact could that have on our culture, do you think?
Yeah, now that's a very deep question. And speaking of Silicon Valley, so We're kind of obsessed with precocity, right? So when Mark Zuckerberg is 22 years old and says young people are just smarter, which he famously said, we hold on to that story. But where recent research from the Census Bureau and MIT shows that the average age of a startup, of a founder of a blockbuster startup on the day of founding, not when it becomes a blockbuster, is 45 and a half, we don't really internalize that so much. So one of the things I think is we need to recognize that this is actually the norm for a lot of things we want to do, right? When LinkedIn's recent research on 500,000 members found that one of the best predictors of who would become an executive was the number of different job functions someone had worked across. And I think that's because people get, well, I think their chief economist thinks, that it's because people get sort of a more holistic view of the context that they're working in. And I think that's really important no matter where you're working. So in the course of reporting this book, I had something that very rarely happens to me. A financial regulator heard I was writing about specialization, reached out to me and said, I just want you to know and include that specialization played this really important role in the financial crisis where bank regulators regulated banks and consumer regulators regulated consumers, et cetera, and everyone optimized their little piece of the picture, but the provision of credit runs across the entire system and nobody was looking at that. And I think that's kind of a good analogy that I use in the book, ranging from medicine to sports, where we have this problem where if we're too focused, we're just looking at tiny pieces of a puzzle and with no view toward what the puzzle says overall. And I think Kara's point is really astute. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go on in Silicon Valley sometimes where you sort of say, like, gosh, maybe it would be good if there were a few history majors out there to let them know what's going to happen because we've seen this before.
My guest is David Epstein. The name of his book is Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Are you a proud generalist? Give us a call. Or maybe you have a question for David. We're going to check in with Claudia, who is calling us on line 3. Claudia, thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you great.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I just really resonated with this conversation because I found, even though I have a master's degree, which is very specialized in environmental policy and science, that all of the roles that I've been asked to do in administrative or media really require that I be familiar with so many different pathways of, like, communicating with the public, and that really, like, just specializing and just doing one job, like just Excel spreadsheets, is, like, no longer something that I'm expected to just do, like just one thing. It's often an array of different tasks with different systems of operations. And I just think that we hammer into people that they should specialize early on, and it maybe makes them fearful to try new pathways. And I guess I'm excited that this conversation is happening because it's encouraging people to try things they've never known that they'd be good at.
Claudia, thank you so much for calling. Let's check in with Jose. Jose, you're a proud jack of all trades. Is that true?
Yes, I am, very much so. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm a computer tech, and I work with people in home offices and in small businesses. And if I was just a computer tech, I would not be able to solve some of the issues that come up sometimes involving construction, involving home theater, involving all sorts of things. So having kind of a broader understanding of things kind of makes me a better troubleshooter.
Jose, thanks for giving us a call. If you'd like to join this conversation, the number is 212-433-9692. My guest is David Epstein. He's written a book called Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. Now, I know there are people out there thinking, but what about the 10,000-hour rule to master in a field? This is, you know, obviously the Malcolm Gladwell. It was part of his last book, his last book or the book before that, that you had 10,000 hours and something to get true masteries. It was in the book, I think, Outliers. So what are your thoughts on the 10,000-hour rule?
Yeah, good question. And by the way, to go back to that caller, Claudia, I also have a master's degree in environmental science and was living in a tent in the Arctic when I decided for sure I was going to become a writer. And it turned out that I took this incredibly ordinary skills in science. And when I arrived at Sports Illustrated, they were totally extraordinary. And I was able to become the science writer there.
Mentioned
a number of good points, but I won't dwell on that unless you want me to. But the 10,000-hour rule was kind of never really a thing. So it was born out of this study of 30 violinists who were so highly pre-screened they were already in a world-famous music academy. So this is a problem that statisticians call restriction of range. Like, it picked a sample that was already selected for what you were looking for, and the 20 best had practiced on average 10,000 hours by age, the 10 best, sorry, 10,000 hours on average by age 20, but there was considerable variation around that. So 10,000 was just an average, right? So, like, it takes 11,053 hours on average to reach international master status in chess, but some people make it in 3,000 hours, and some are at 25,000 hours and still haven't made it. So having these average rules actually doesn't tell you anything about the role of unique individual variation. And so that's the first problem. One is that when we actually disaggregate data looking at people as they go on to expertise, the paths are incredibly varied, and making these average rules by necessity squashes that variation that we've learned from research. And secondly, it turns out that the way to be the best at X thing is not to just do X thing from as early as possible and only that. And in fact, when Malcolm Gladwell and I were just invited to a conference to discuss this, he said, "I now realize I've conflated two ideas, the fact that a lot of practice is required with the idea that you should do only that thing as early as possible." We were specifically talking about sports, and what you see in sports is athletes who go on to become elite typically have what scientists call a sampling period, where they play a broad variety of sports. They gain these general skills that scaffold later learning. They learn about their interests. They learn about their abilities. And they systematically delay specializing until later than peers who plateau at lower levels. And that turns out to be a pretty good analogy for a lot of other fields.
I have two questions to follow up on that. One, where does innate talent fit into this? Because you could become an elite athlete later in one sport, but you could be generally just it's a specific sport, but you could be talented athletic person.
Totally. And my first book was about genetics and athleticism. So that was the topic. And there are a couple things you get at there. One, when I first saw those results about delayed specialization, I thought that it was just going to be that those athletes were more talented and could play more sports. So they didn't have to practice as much early on in their sport. But then I started finding these studies like of European pro soccer players, where the scientists would match them at a certain ages for skill level, and then track them over several years. And if this was in like the mid-teen years, it would be the ones who did more unstructured play, and who played a different variety of sports, who would have improved more by time two. So at a certain point, you focus in, but you want this less structured, more diverse formation period, and countries that are doing really well, like France, who won the World Cup, have reformed their pipeline to reflect this. And it's not just a sports thing. What you really want, whether you're studying a sports skill or math, there are two types of knowledge. There's using procedures knowledge, where you learn like a technical skill for sports or how to execute an algorithm in math. And then there's making connections knowledge, this broader, where you get these broader conceptual skills that you can sort of mold to different environments. You learn how to match a strategy to a type of problem, whether that's a sports situation or a math problem. And to do that, you actually want this broader training that's more self-directed, with a mix of problem types that you face early on, and that forces you to build these broader conceptual models where you're learning to match strategies to problems instead of how to just execute procedures.
My guess
it
is
slows learning down early, though. That's one of the difficulties.
My guess is David Epstein. The name of his book is Range: Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. Let's get to some more calls, and I have some more questions too. Gregory is calling us from Harlem. Hi, Gregory.
How are you this afternoon? This is a great topic. I love this because, and going right to the point of what he was just saying, you know, I've always been a creative type. So you can be creative and do many different things. I started off as a copywriter in the advertising industry. I was a radio producer. I produced records and videos for a couple of record companies back in the day. And when I retired, I got really bored. And so now I sit here and I make bow ties, and I created my own Bose Nouveau company, you know, a couple of years ago. And now I sell bow ties, exclusive handmade bow ties. So I've always been creative. And that goes to, what he was just talking about is there are people who are just athletic. You know,
yeah.
I use
You're
my
just
mind
creative.
In that way. Yeah, I'm just a creative guy.
And a life well lived, I'd say. Thanks, Gregory.
Thank you.
Let's go to Mike in Bayhead. Hi, Mike. Ooh, did I get Mike? They're letting me pick the calls. I'm not doing a good job. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, this is me.
Hey, Mike. What do you want to add?
How are you? Well, yeah, no, I've been listening while I'm on hold, and I've done many different things in my life, corporate down to police officer, you know, that, you know, not down to police officer, but I mean,
we got you.
All the way, that was early in my career, and then I changed and went in the corporate world. And the fact that I've done so many things, I've been a business owner, and you know, all those different selections I've made, I think makes me more valuable than somebody in just one lane. To be able to do a decent job or a more than average job in multiple lanes, I think makes me more valuable. And it kind of ties into what was just said about the athletic comparison, where like my experience in sports was high school and college football. And if you were able to fill multiple positions on a team, you're way more valuable than just somebody that could play one position. So I agree with the author and Mr. Epstein, is it?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Mike, thank you so much. We're gonna. I want to slide one more call in here.
I'm going to get the book, too.
Okay. There you go. You sold the book there. Let's slide David in. David is calling from New York City. Hi, David. Are you there?
Am I on?
You are on. Hi.
Yes. Okay, so first of all, I am a generalist, but I also like to keep that a little bit of a secret. And I think that he let it out of the bag, and it's sort of like let the hare know that the tortoise is going to win, so to speak. My background is architecture, and I always try to do something innovative using all my skills, and I call it, when I come across a problem that I have to solve, I MacGyver it.
You MacGyver it, yes.
referring to the innovative way that MacGyver was able to make something out of nothing. So, and I also remember, I think it was Alexander Pope that said, we enter the particular through the door of the general. So in terms of like somebody like Edison, who went through 10,000 possibilities before it came up with the right combination. And, you know, everything he said is so true, but I'm a little disappointed that he let the cat out of the bag because I like being, you know,
it's your secret weapon.
And keep my powder dry, so to speak.
David on his secret weapon. Thank you so much for calling in, David. My guest is David Epstein. The name of his book is Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. I want to get two more questions in. One is, you write in the book that we should not be afraid to quit, that bailing on something is not necessarily bad.
Yes.
Why is that?
And this actually gets to a little bit your question about talent, which I think I got sidetracked and didn't sufficiently answer there. So one of the reasons it's important to quit is because, as Herminia Ibarra, who studies this concept, who I talk about in Range, she studies the concept of in a way, match quality. So this is the term economists use for the degree of fit between your interests, your abilities, and the work that you do. And it turns out to be extremely important for your motivation, for your performance level, and so on. And there's a vast industry that sort of would have us believe that we can take a personality quiz or just introspect and know who we should be, like that commencement speech advice. Look, who are you going to be in 10 or 20 years, and then just march confidently toward it. But as Herminia Ibarra marshals psychological research to show, we learn who we are in practice, not in theory. That is, our insight into ourselves is constrained by our roster of previous experiences. So we have to actually try stuff, reflect on it, and then zigzag accordingly so you get better match quality. And one of the reasons that's so important is because that is how you find what your talents are, because talent does matter. And therefore, match quality really matters because you want to find that, but we're not that good at intuiting it without trying things. So in the Army, for example, I write about when they were having trouble retaining really high potential officers because those officers would sort of learn skills and then go leave when they wanted to do something different. They've had more success with a program they called talent-based branching. So instead of saying, here's your career track, go up or out, they pair this officer with a coach. They basically say, here's a bunch of career tracks, try a bunch of different ones, dabble in some different ones. Each time, the coach will help you reflect on that experience and how it interacted with your talents, and then you'll zigzag until we get better match quality. And they've had better retention with that than they did with just throwing money at people, which wasted $500 million of taxpayer money, and the people who were frustrated left anyway. So part of the reason you want to have this period of experimentation or quitting is because that's how you maximize your match quality. So all of the, in one of the studies in the book called the Dark Horse Project, all of the subjects, these are people who reached a point of high fulfillment in their work, are like these callers where they say, you know, the last caller said, don't let the cat out of the bag. Well, he's normal, actually, it turns out, for people who are fulfilled. They all came into this study and said, don't tell people to do what I do because I'm abnormal. I went this one way and then I switched and I thought I was going to be this, but I didn't like it. And they all view themselves as having come out of nowhere, which is why the researchers called it the Dark Horse Project, because they all viewed themselves as dark horses.
The name of the book is Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. David Epstein, thanks for being a guest on All of It.
Thank you very much for having me.
Coming up next, WNYC's chief archivist Andy Lancet will join us in the studio with some audio from summers past. More after the break.